3-minute record, baby. Written by Alchemistique. Read by Be Brave 13. Summary. The sun, already dipping low in the sky, catches his eye and flashes as he drives past miles and miles of yellow and green, fallen leaves flying up behind the back wheels as he careens down the road at speeds he hasn't driven since he was younger and stupider, and still thought there was a chance his parents might love him. The cross breeze flowing past him as a bite, as summer bleeds into fall, and the sun falls low earlier every day. He's glad of the sun-kissed warmth of the sweatshirt swimming around his wrists, glad of the cutting chill of the wind against his face, cold enough that he can blame the streaking tears on the icy breeze. He makes it 20 minutes past the town limits before he has to pull the BMW off to the side of the road and scream. Author's note. Title comes from Springsteen's No Surrender, because Steve definitely listens to Born in the USA when he's alone and needs to cry. With the windows down and the music turned up, it's almost enough for Steve to forget the ringing in his ears, the crushing tightness in his chest. Almost. The sun, already dipping low in the sky, catches his eye and flashes as he drives past miles and miles of yellow and green, fallen leaves flying out behind the back wheels as he careens down the roads at speeds he hasn't driven since he was younger and stupider, and still thought there was a chance his parents might love him. The cross breeze flowing past him has a bite. As summer bleeds into fall and the sun falls low earlier every day, he's glad of the sun-kissed warmth of the sweatshirt swimming around his wrists, glad of the cutting chill of the wind against his face, cold enough he can blame the streaking tears on the icy breeze. He makes it 20 minutes past the town limits before he has to pull the BMW off the side of the road and scream. It's been a long time since he actually believed his parents gave a shit about him. Up until now, he'd at least been able to pretend they might at least feel some familial sense of duty to him. That's what parents do, he thinks, as he paces, one step to the edge of the road, two steps away until he's pressed against chicken wire of a fenced-off farm 20 feet off the side of the highway. They keep a roof over your head. They feed you until you can fend for yourself. They throw money at your issues and then they fuck you up. Life. That's what parents do, and he's known that for years, but in the face of his father's righteous anger and his mother's blank antidepressant stare, he'd still let himself believe, for a fucking moment, that it might be okay. The breeze shifts, glances across Steve's face, and uses the edge of his shirt sleeve to dash away angry tears, scrubbing at the skin under his eyes until it feels raw. There's a gaping hole in Steve's soul, and it's mother and father shaped, but it's so warped now that he's not even sure what it looks like anymore. A pit so deep and wide, it might as well just swallow him whole, and he'd welcome it. Welcome the chance to not be here, not be this, not be Steve fucking Harrington any longer. It started out fine, Steve thinks. Dinner with his parents in the quiet, echoing maw of a house they stepped in twice a year. Spaghetti carbonara he'd cooked for them because they didn't keep a cook on anymore, and he wasn't sure either of his parents actually knew how to work the oven or the stove, and he thought it'd be nice. 3 glasses of wine, because his mom had stared at the table set for 3, and pulled out a 3rd glass and poured Pinot Grigio for all of them with a steady hand. Stilted conversation, because the light over the dining room table was brighter than he liked to keep it, and the headaches never really subsided after that time Billy broke a plate over his head. His parents didn't know about the concussions, and Steve didn't like to examine that too closely, so he popped 4 Tylenol and kept the lights in the kitchen off until he heard his parents' footsteps close enough that they might notice. It started fine. "I got a job at Family Video," Steve had told them during a lull in conversation, and it might as well have been a loaded gun shoved into his father's face for the look his father had given him. That was a thing, though, about parents. You never quite lived up to their expectations, even when you tried. Tires squeal along the pavement, cutting into the gravel somewhere behind the Beamer, and Steve hadn't realized until he turned to look that he dug his palms into the chicken wire hard enough to draw blood. The van skidding to a stop alarmingly close to his back bumper is familiar, in that way that old beat-up things usually are. And it's not until he blinks through the fog and hears the music blasting out the open window that he remembers nearly crashing into the damn thing for almost a month straight his senior year. He'd fucking hated that van, and the stupid asshole who was constantly screeching into the parking lot every morning, always coming in from the opposite direction as Steve, always with an arm out the window and some half-hearted apology wave, even as he continued on past a startled Steve. The music cuts off with the engine. And Eddie Munson swings out the driver's side door with a curious tilt to his head. Steve, for all of a heartbeat, considers letting the guy get close enough for Steve to swing at him. He doesn't know much about Munson, knows Tommy used to buy his weed and coke off of him until Billy Hargrove told Tommy he was a queer and that shit was catching. Knows he hadn't graduated a year ahead of Steve like he was supposed to, hadn't graduated with Steve either. Knows every once in a while in the back half of Steve's senior year, he'd met Munson's eyes across the cafeteria, and rather than deal with another fucking second of awkward eye contact with the freak who still had all his friends, Steve had gathered his shit up and eaten in his fucking car. Knows that Munson is waif-thin and never played a sport in his fucking life, and he'd probably just fucking run if Steve swung at him anyway. Knows the ass-beating he's looking for in this moment isn't gonna come courtesy of Eddie fucking Munson. Steve shoves that shit down where it belongs. It's probably not healthy, going to swing a fist at someone just so he can fucking feel something. Like he's hoping just one more fist to the face will turn him into a good person. Like if just once his father had hit him, instead of using raised voices and words of disappointment, maybe he could at least have something to talk about with people like Jonathan Byers. Hell, Jonathan had knocked the first lick of sense he'd ever had into him. He'd gotten the kids after Billy, he'd gotten Robin out of the Russians. "You good, man?" Steve clenches his fist and feels the cuts he dug into his palms burn. He should tell the guy to fuck off. He should ignore him. Ideally, he should get into his car and press on the gas until the wheels shake and his parents can blame a shoddy suspension when he twists the wheel and the Stadies find a wreck on the side of the road. Except, that's giving them what they want, Steve thinks. They'd be so much happier if Steve just didn't exist, but sometimes, most of the time even, Steve likes existing, even when it sucks, even when it hurts, even when his hands are bleeding and his cheeks are rubbed raw and salt slick. Steve plops his ass down on the ground next to the fence, and wonders if Eddie Munson will bother to check and make sure he hasn't just, like, passed out or something. The grass along the shoulder is dead, but still stiff enough that Steve can't really see much around it as it sways, but Steve hears footsteps retreating, a door opening and then slamming closed. He listens for the engine of the van to catch, only it doesn't. Steve peeks his head over the grass, just to check, and there's Eddie. A little blurry around the edges, because Steve's eyesight is shit, and he hasn't gotten it checked, because how the fuck is he supposed to explain to his parents that he's been concussed enough times that sometimes he has to shut his left eye to see the street signs at night? Hands gripped against the steering wheel, staring at Steve through the passenger side window like Steve might be a fucking ghost. He feels like one, sometimes. Munson dithers there for a moment, then slides his gaze away, and he bends over the wheel like he's gonna start his van back up and peel out. Steve ducks back down. Listens to the wind flowing through the grass. He'd been to the ocean once. Years and years ago, when Grandma Jo was still alive, and her townhouse in Laguna Beach had seemed like a castle, and he'd been too young to go down to the shore on his own, but Grandma Jo had taken his hand and squeezed his cheek and tottered along beside him down the pathway, smiling at him as he picked up shells, so many he'd filled the pockets of his shorts. She'd laughed when he'd drawn the ire of a particularly territorial seagull and swatted the bird away before Steve could think to scream, and they'd sat right there at the edge of the water, watching the tide drift in and out until the sun dipped low on the water and the sounds had nearly lulled Steve right off to sleep. His mother had thrown a fit when Grandma Jo told her where they'd been, listing off a flurry of ways his grandmother had put him in danger, and Steve hadn't really understood it at the time, but now he thinks maybe his mom just hadn't liked the fact that Grandma Jo didn't give a shit about the plans the Harringtons had for Steve. The breeze through the grass sounds close enough to his memory that it could almost be the same. If he closes his eyes and curls his hand into the dirt below him and ignores the idling engine not far off, he can almost convince himself he's there, pressing palms into wet sand and feeling water lapping at his toes. The engine stops idling, and a door slams open, then closed. Footsteps approach. Steve tips his head back and tilts backwards until he's lying down. "Couldn't have a breakdown in the car like the rest of us do?" Munson asks, and Steve isn't sure he's ever heard Eddie's voice at a normal volume. "Always gotta be fucking extra." He plops himself right down in the grass next to Steve, and Steve squints over at him.
"Who says I'm having a breakdown?"
"I mean, up until I was right here, I thought maybe it was a car issue, but you look like someone took a sander to your face, and I doubt the bloodshot eyes are a result of my exemplary weed, seeing as how you don't hang out with the shitheads I sell to anymore. Also, your hands are bleeding."
"Chicken wire,"
Steve tells him, like that explains everything. And maybe it does, or maybe it doesn't, but Steve closes his eyes so he doesn't have to see Munson's reaction either way. "You want me to go?" Eddie asks. And Steve doesn't know him, doesn't know anything at all about this guy, but it sounds kind. He sounds kind.
"No,"
Steve says, and is sort of a little surprised that he means it. But Steve's never liked being alone. Product of being alone most of his life, probably.
"You want me to smoke you out?"
Eddie asks, and there's a metallic noise at Steve's hip. He remembers one time Tommy'd mentioned planning to jump Eddie to steal that stupid fucking ancient lunchbox he was always carting around. Steve hesitates, because there's literally nothing he'd like in this moment more than getting the fuck out of his own head, but...
"No, don't have cash."
Eddie scoffs. "Oh, Harrington, don't you know the best drug dealers wait until you're at your lowest, give you free shit, and then get you fucking hooked?"
"Is this me at my lowest?"
It's a stupid question. But Munson hadn't offered him free shit that time they'd bumped into each other ditching class, and Steve had thrown up on his boots because he'd gone to school rather than the hospital after Billy smashed a plate over his head and he nearly died fighting hell beasts. "You wanna smoke with me or not, man?" Steve levers himself up to sitting, slides his eyes over to Eddie. His hair's longer than Steve remembers.
"I was an asshole to you for years,"
he says, voice rising at the end like it's a question, and Eddie rolls his eyes, chews on the corner of his lip. "Not directly," he seeds, though he doesn't deny it.
"Cowardly asshole isn't better than asshole."
"Jesus, have you always been this depressing, dude?"
"Yeah,"
Steve says, and the laugh bubbles out of him before he can help himself. He lets himself give in to it, The anger, the hurt, the undeniable fact that he hates himself way more than his parents ever could, because they'd have to have given a shit about him to start with, to really despise him. He laughs, hard, bent over with his head between his knees and the wind biting at his ears until he thinks he'll probably start crying again. And he sobers up, hiccuping through the amusement, digging his nails into his scraped up palms so he doesn't fucking cry. Yeah, okay. Get the fuck up, man. Get in the goddamn van. Actually, give me your fucking keys first so you don't make a run for it.
You kidnapping me?
It's the funniest thing in that moment. Funny enough that even though he's blinking furiously to hide the wet corners of his eyes, he can't quite stop himself from grinning, and maybe the Russian drugs have permanently altered his brain chemistry. Or maybe everything is just so fucked that Steve can't quite make himself give a shit about not looking absolutely insane. Or maybe Eddie's eyes are just as wide and bright and wild as Steve always thought they were. Jesus, give me keys, Harrington, and get in my van before I find a rock to brain you with and leave you on the side of the road.
Kidnapping's better than murder,
he sings songs with a shrug, and lumbers to his feet, reaches out a hand to pull Eddie up too, and tosses his keys at him. Munson fumbles the catch, but manages to capture them on his thigh before they hit the ground.
You're fully insane,
Munson says, and Steve doesn't disagree, but Eddie doesn't know the half of it. Steve fights the passenger door for a full 30 seconds before Munson huffs and pushes past him.
You gotta...
He presses in with his hip, jiggles the handle, and Steve watches it all with mute curiosity. He's lived an entire fucking life with the newest, best everything, with handles that don't stick, and mechanics that never get old enough to need fixing. The door clicks open just as Eddie's tongue pokes out between his teeth, and he swings it wide, gesturing for Steve to hop up. Steve's two-thirds of the way in before he pauses, head twisting to find Eddie still holding the door open for him, one arm outstretched above the window, the other bracketed against the frame, caging Steve in like he's legitimately concerned Steve's going to, what, duck around him and run into traffic? Something zings in Steve's chest, and he shoves that all the way back down where it came from, because... Where are we going? Eddie stills, eyes snapping up to Steve's like he hadn't really thought that far in his planning.
You're kidnapping me, man. Don't look at me like I gotta help you figure it out.
Get in the fucking car, dude.
Sir, yes, sir,
he says with a tilted grin, and Eddie's eyes narrow. Steve bundles into the passenger seat, curls his legs up and tucks his chin on his knees, eyes following Eddie as he stomps around the hood to the driver's side. He's talking to himself, Steve thinks. The edges of his mouth are curled into a grimace, and once upon a time, Steve might have used that sort of shit against Munson, but it's...
Say no to a lost little sheepie for once in your goddamn life,
he hears when the driver's side door swings open, and then Eddie is hopping into the driver's seat and slamming the door behind him. He's got nice hair, Steve thinks, distantly. Messier than Nancy's had ever been, but the curls are defined enough that Steve thinks he must sometimes put actual work into it. And probably the messy thing is part of his overall vibe, anyway. For a moment, Steve wonders what it would feel like to run his hands through it.
Gonna be honest, I didn't actually think you'd give me your keys. Definitely thought you'd make a break for it before I got you into that seat.
Rock bottom. Steve tells him, a little nonsensically, and then makes a whistling noise as he mimes a bomb drop with one hand. He makes the exploding noise as he opens his fingers wide down by his feet, and Eddie looks mildly endeared. It's not a bad look, at all. The sort of look Steve wouldn't mind seeing more of when he wasn't spiraling down an increasingly dark pit in his mind. Eddie probably hated him, though. Most people did. I'm on my way to Indy, Eddie says, slowly, softly, like he's thinking Steve might start crying again. You got plans this weekend?
Not anymore, Steve says, and then grimaces, pressing his face into his knees. I'd apologize, but I'm probably gonna be a morose motherfucker the whole way there, so I don't want to set a precedent. It strikes him that he's just invited himself along for Eddie's, weekend stint to Indianapolis. It strikes him that Eddie doesn't immediately call him out on it and tell him to fuck off. What's an Indy? When he rolls his head on his knee to look across the space between them, Eddie is giving him a contemplative look. I'm gonna need you to actually cry in my presence before I give you the lowdown on that, big boy. Steve laughs a little brokenly. You got any Springsteen tapes in there? Steve would be lying if he said his eyes didn't bulge nearly out of their sockets when Eddie reaches across to flip open the glove compartment and sift through a mess of crumpled receipts and empty cigarette cartons to dig a tape out from the mess. Eddie peels out onto the highway with Born in the USA blasting, past the Beamer, past the mile marker sign, windows down and the biting cold air twisting a riot of curly hair around his face, and Steve gets about half a minute into No Surrender before Eddie gets his switch. It doesn't make any sense, really. Steve slides his parents' credit card across the counter at the motel off the highway, doesn't even blink at the shifty look the desk clerk shoots at Eddie smoking a cigarette outside, and ignores the second look he gets when he shrugs at being told they don't have any doubles available. Eddie grunts and shoots a side eye at Steve when he pushes through the door himself, duffel over his shoulder as he shoves past Steve, chewing on his lip as he sets the bag down on the floor. He shifts, drops his gaze to the floor, stuffs a hand in the pockets of a leather jacket, tense and quiet, and nothing at all like the theatrical idiot Steve had always seen him be in high school. There'd been rumors. There'd always been rumors in high school. It was what fucking high schoolers did, talk shit and start shit and make shit up when the other two got boring. But there'd been rumors. The kind Steve murmured under his breath about other people when Tommy stared at his lips a little too long and Steve looked back. Deflection, denial, fucking repression, sure. All of it shitty and terrible, and he never tossed this particular rumor around, because sometimes Steve looked at Eddie too. And while he'd always been a bit of a douche, that one had hit a little too close to home. There's probably a cot in the closet, Eddie says. And Steve shrugs. Suit yourself. I'm a cuddler anyway. There isn't a cot. And Eddie seems nervous about it, so Steve lays on top of the covers in his jeans and hums My Hometown. You're surprisingly chill about sharing a bed with Hawkins' most notorious fag, Eddie tells him, perched on the very edge of the bed, looking ready to bolt. His lips are wet and red, chewed rough. Hate the fucking word, is all Steve can think to say. Robin comes to mind, so terrified of being outed, she'd almost taken him up on his offer to pretend they were dating when she went back to school weeks ago. Tommy pops in there for a moment, spitting the word furiously, even if growing up he'd curled around Steve during sleepovers and snuffled in Steve's ear and hadn't stopped until well beyond they were old enough to know better. His dad comes next, shaking his head while newscaster reports on the virus, and Steve thinks of God's plan, and serves him right, and abomination. He thinks of the shift of muscle when Coach had them play shirts versus skins, of the stretch of thin skin over a sharp jawline, of heavy brows and hairy chests, and the way he turned down his eyes when his gaze lingered a moment too long. He thinks of his father's red face, when Steve had raised his voice earlier tonight. He'd never done that before. Yell at his father. Even when it's true? It's a shitty word. And Steve twists, curls his knees up towards his chest. Doesn't matter whether it's true or not. Jesus H. Christ, Harrington, does everything fly right the fuck over your head? Usually, Steve tells him. And then, oh.
Steve has the irrational urge to curl a hand over Eddie's bird-boned wrist and drag him into the bathroom. Instead, he takes a deep breath, blows it out through his nose. He'd always sort of thought Eddie was a bit of a coward, honestly. He played to an audience, got his digs in surrounded by faculty and fellow rejects in every scrap he'd ever seen the guy in. He'd never once thrown a fucking punch. This feels brave. Reckless, stupid brave, and Steve isn't one to back down from a challenge, even if it's a challenge in his own goddamn mind. Same, he says on another exhale. I mean, sort of. I don't even know if there's a name for it, actually. It's both. This is the most insane day of my life, Eddie tells him, eyes blown wide and darting across Steve's face. It's the worst day of Steve's, or it's up there anyway, right next to finding out monsters were real and getting his shit rocked by a racist dickhead and Russian torture, but just like those other worst days of his life, it's also sort of the best, because Steve is looking, and Eddie is looking back, and his father's tinny voice in his mind sounds quieter than it has in years. What's an indie? Steve asks again. Eddie snorts. A dingy gay bar. Usually a lackluster hookup or two I never speak to again. A drag queen who does all my tattoos. And you brought me up here to... There wasn't really a plan, man. Definitely not to admit any of that. Eddie blinks. You looked fucking sad, dude. Dustin hasn't shut up about Munson since he signed up for that stupid club, and Steve is vaguely aware of the fact that in past years he'd done the same for other outcasts, taken them under his wing, given them a home, even shielded them a bit from some of the worst shit the Steve Harringtons of the world like to dish. Lost little sheepy, he'd said. Sorry, he says, and curls an arm over his knees. The ceiling above his head is stained, and the pillow beneath his head is flat and wilted, and Eddie Munson has given him the kind of secret he knows could be used against him. How much of a cuddler? Eddie asks him with narrowed eyes, and Steve bites down on a grin. They don't talk about it. Not at first. Steve wakes up that morning with a handful of Eddie's band tee clutched in his fist, a mouthful of dark curls in his mouth, and his half-hard dick pressed against Eddie's bony hip. They don't talk about it, but Eddie looks, and Steve looks back. And when Steve bunches up his shoulders and complains that his club jacket probably wasn't the best idea he'd ever had for, what, running away? Eddie blows out a breath through his nose and tugs his denim vest off, throws it over Steve's shoulders, and watches through hooded eyes as Steve presses his arms through it and fusses with the lapel. It's cold and gloomy in Indianapolis, as it had been in Hawkins, but they wander the streets of downtown as Eddie points out the places he's known to haunt, and Steve catalogs them all, listens to Eddie's voice, soft and warm, and his eyes crinkle around the edges when he smiles. Sometimes I just gotta get the hell out of town limits, you know? He says, when Steve asks him why he spends full weekends here instead of just getting his rocks off and returning to his own bed. Not all of us have fucking mansions and 1,000 thread count sheets to return to. Steve's pretty sure that's off the table for him now, too, but he gets the point. I told my dad I was a fag, Steve tells him, and hates the way the word sounds just as much now as when he'd parroted it back to his father, as when he told Eddie he didn't like it. I have a friend who, she knows about, like, gay shit, and we've been talking about infernal shit, and... Do you mean internalize? Eddie asks, and there's amusement dancing around the edges of his eyes, but it doesn't make Steve feel more stupid like it usually would, and Steve snaps his fingers, nods. Did you know people, like, recognize all the shit they hate about themselves and other people and attack it? Eddie's raised eyebrow is answer enough. A fucking course he does. He nods anyway, bumps his shoulder against Steve's. Buckley or Wheeler? Steve hesitates. And that seems to be enough. Enough for Eddie to know he doesn't want to say. Enough for Eddie to recognize that maybe there's more to it than Steve's identity crisis. Enough for Steve to cotton on to the fact that Eddie somehow knows enough about Steve to know that Steve is pathetic enough to have two age-appropriate friends, his ex and his fucking coworker. There's more to it than that, of course, and Steve thinks Eddie gets that, too, even if he can't possibly know that Nancy broke his fucking heart, and Steve will still love her until the day he dies because she'd been the first person who ever had the decency to call him on his bullshit. Even if he can't know that Steve loves Robin with his entire goddamn soul and he'd kill for her, die for her, expose himself to ridicule and scorn and a life of fucking celibacy to keep her safe and comfortable. You're surprisingly insightful for a meathead jock who encouraged his friends to be bullies in high school. It's a weird distinction, not calling Steve a bully. It doesn't feel quite right. He'd been just as bad as the rest of them. Quieter, maybe. Crueler in the way he'd stepped aside and let everyone else really tear into anyone stupid enough to let their vulnerabilities just sit there, out in the open where the sharks could smell the blood. Turns out, I don't like being a shithead, Steve says on a shrug, and Eddie laughs. It's a warm, loud bursting from deep in Eddie's chest, and Steve thinks, not for the first time, that his parents have fucked him up so goddamn bad because Eddie laughs, and Steve hasn't known him long enough to explain the feeling blooming in his chest, like he'd like to curl under Eddie's skin and rest there. The slightest hint of companionship from a stranger and Steve just slots them into this little filing cabinet in his mind where he keeps all the people he'd kill for, die for, throw his whole life into chaos for. What do you like? Eddie asks after Steve buys them lunch. And his parents' credit card still works, but Steve isn't sure how much longer that's gonna last. Steve mulls that over while he watches nimble fingers pick through the records in the music shop tucked in an alleyway across from a strip club. He'd liked swimming, once upon a time. Basketball, maybe, though he'd never been good enough at it for it to mean anything. He'd liked dating, although that had lost a lot of appeal in its recent months. He liked getting lost in music that hit a little too close to home and talking to Robin about shit he only half understood even when he tried, and he liked driving all those little dickheads around, even when they poked fun at his hair and his dating habits and the way he drove like a grandma. Taking care of people, I guess, Steve says, and eyes the lines that drop on Eddie's forehead when he tilts his head up to hold Steve's gaze. I don't know, man. I work and take girls I don't give a shit about on dates and cart around a bunch of preteens in my free time. Hobbies, his father had always told him, are for people without a purpose. Steve Harrington always had a purpose. Charm the right people, get into the right crowds, get into a good school, work for his dad, find a nice girl to settle down with. Cheat on her. Once he'd knocked her up and secured her loyalty, hate his job and his peers and punish his kid for daring to not want that life for themselves. We can fix that. They do talk about it. Later, when Eddie nestles in next to him in a grimy booth and hands him a beer. The lights are dim and the music is loud, and two tables over, two guys are making out. You are not what I expected, Steve Harrington, Eddie tells him, arm curled around Steve's shoulders and the length of their sides pressed together. Should have known better than to question those damn kids. It comes in fits and starts. Steve tells Eddie about the time he'd invited a bunch of his friends over for his birthday, one of the years his parents were actually around for it. Recalls the way his father had looked when he'd caught Steve and Roger Hammond with their pinkies linked together out by the pool. And Steve had been half certain he was in trouble for being so close to the water without adult supervision, but instead, after all his friends had left, he'd gotten a lecture on queers, and the indescribable damage they were doing to society. He'd been 8. It hadn't even been Roger he was crushing on, but Roger was there, and Roger was kind, and Roger had hair that flopped over his forehead in the same way Tommy's did, and Tommy hadn't been able to make it to his birthday party. Steve tells Eddie about all the ways he had forced his attraction onto girl-shaped things. The cupid's bow, the gentle slope of a collarbone, delicate fingers and brow bones and upturned noses, sweet voices and pastel colors. How it had worked, mostly, for his formative years, until he started sleeping around and kept wondering how it'd be different with a guy. If it'd be better. Steve tells Eddie that sometime between Jonathan knocking his head into the pavement and Nancy calling him bullshit, he'd stopped giving a shit about trying to keep it all in a nice little box with a pretty pink bow. The two guys making out in the booth two tables over disappear into the bathroom together, and Steve asks Eddie what it's like. It's sex, man. And I don't have anything to compare it to, so I'm not sure why you're asking me. Steve curls himself around Eddie on a Saturday night, or Sunday morning, on the gray bedspread of a shitty motel, and resolutely doesn't ask Eddie to fuck him, even if he wants to. On Sunday afternoon, after they've checked out, after Steve buys them breakfast with his parents' still-working credit card, Eddie drags Steve up two flights of stairs in a walk-up on the outskirts of the city, and Steve watches while a guy with a low voice and a face full of makeup drags a buzzing needle over the skin of Eddie's upper arm. Bobby eyes Steve's three-day polo and the vest around his shoulders and raises a brow after he's cleaned up his supplies, and Eddie is admiring his new ink in the mirror. "He's never brought anyone around here before," Bobby says, a soft, protective look passing over his eyes as he darts his gaze to Eddie. "You take care of that boy." And Steve could tell Bobby he was just a friend, could tell Bobby they weren't even that, could drop some half-hearted line about just being along for the ride, but he's never been a great liar about anything that actually mattered. And the fact that he's known Eddie for less than 72 hours doesn't negate the fact that he's already got a folder in that file cabinet in the back of Steve's brain. Back in the van, Springsteen crooning the closing lines to Bobby Jean, Eddie turns to Steve, and Steve thinks that maybe this is it. One weekend to bear his soul to a stranger that loves the same idiots he does. One weekend to tell his secrets before he has to lock them back up and carry them deep inside. "How do you feel about math?" Eddie asks, chewing on his lip, eyes downcast so that when he looks up at Steve, it's through long lashes. "We gotta find you a hobby, man, and I'm not jumping straight into teaching you how to play guitar because my dick cannot handle that." "Math?" Steve asks, to avoid thinking too hard about we, to avoid thinking about Eddie's dick. "Yes or no, dude, because my special interests require, like, a shit ton of backstory, and I need a baseline before I try to convince you to join me on this journey of Steve Harrington's self-discovery." "Wouldn't you be joining me?" "Semantics." It's easy, in the end, for Steve to shrug his shoulders and agree, as long as he doesn't have to, like, remember the quadratic formula. And it's not until they're halfway back to Hawkins that Steve realizes he's just been roped into playing Dustin and his friend's fucking nerd game. He doesn't mind so much, when Eddie explains it, all flailing limbs and warm smile and soft eyes. Steve almost forgets about his car, almost forgets about all the shit coming his way, and Eddie actually seems a little hesitant when he flips the van around to pull up behind the Beamer. Steve's told him more about the dark spaces inside his brain in the last 2.5 days than he's pretty sure he's ever told anyone, so that tracks, considering Eddie seems to have the same instinct to give too many shits about people that Steve has.
You could stay with me? If my uncle, he knows about, he'd be cool. If he needed a place to stay. It's a tempting offer. Steve opens his mouth to accept, closes it when his eyes catch on the jutting bone at Eddie's wrist. 20 minutes outside of Hawkins and he feels flayed open and vulnerable again. Wants to shovel his shit back down and go looking for a fight. Or I could just, like, shut my fucking mouth and not be so pushy, Jesus.
Steve catches his arm, slides his thumb down to lay in the divot of the wrist he'd been staring at. "This feels fast," tells Eddie, and Eddie makes a strange, hollow noise that Steve wants to swallow.
I fuck up fast.
Eddie hums, chews on his lip. Steve's noticed it enough times to tuck it into his Eddie folder.
So, slow is on the table.
Steve's shit is probably all packed up in the garage because, God forbid, his parents do something like leave it out on the lawn where the neighbors might see. And he's gonna have to tell Robin. And it's entirely possible the shift he'd missed on Saturday was a nail in the coffin for another minimum wage job he hates but actually needs, and he's still not over Nancy. Still trying to wrap his brain around Robin being something important that isn't and never will be romantic. He's fucked six ways from Sunday, and it's a lot to put on a guy who probably thought Steve was the height of shitty people 3 days ago. But Eddie's eyes are wide and bright and kind. And when he swallows nervously, his throat bobs in a way that makes Steve want to bite it. When does your campaign start? The kids are still putting their characters together, Eddie tells him, barely acknowledging the abrupt subject change. A few weeks, probably. Steve nods, stares at Eddie through narrowed eyes.
How much, Matt?
Between Dustin's fucking hero worship and my stupid crush, you might not even have to do any math yourself, Eddie tells him, and Steve laughs. It feels like the start of something. It feels like shutting the door on the Harringtons' plan for the son he's not sure they ever even wanted. It feels like...
Mike's gonna hate you so much for letting me in on your little nerd fest.
Oh, I think you'll find that Henderson's hero worship for you is minuscule in comparison to how much Mike fucking Wheeler adores me. He'll get over it. He rolls his neck against the headrest. Wheeler's a shithead, but he's pretty staunch Harrington defender too, you know. I think he hates it, but he's in your corner. It hits him like a punch to the gut because he's got a spot in that little file cabinet that's shaped like family for Mike, too, but he'd always sort of figured that was a one-way street.
Okay.
Steve says, because he doesn't want to fucking cry, not now. Not when he thinks his heart might explode and the thought of driving his car into a concrete barrier feels distant and old.
You busy tomorrow?
Eddie sucks his lower lip into his mouth, the smile lines around his eyes creasing. He uses one finger to twirl a curl around his knuckle.
Feels fast,
he says, but the dimple at the side of his mouth is showing. Steve's thumb taps out a rhythm on Eddie's wrist. He's waiting for Eddie to drag the lock of hair across his face because he really wants to brush his fingers over Eddie's temple and tuck the hair back behind Eddie's ear. Eddie catches his eye.
Medium speed is probably fine,
Steve says, and Eddie drags the hair across his mouth to hide his grip. The end.